Well, I have in the studio a gathering of some of the loveliest, nicest people that I have met, and it is certainly the largest crowd to ever sit in this studio. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Don't they sound nice, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. This entire hour is going to be devoted to the SAG-AFTRA senior radio players, a group that I've written about and seen often over the years and have roundly admired. So you people cannot let me down because I have always admired you.
We promise.
You promise?
That's a lot of pressure.
That is a lot of pressure. All right, let's give the listeners some background to the SAG-AFTRA Senior Radio Players. SAG standing for Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA standing for, I'm a member of this.
American Federation of Television and Radio.
Hey, I pay my dues. That's all I care about. Right. Give me some background, if you would, anybody. And do me a favor, when you speak and say something, say, hi, this is so-and-so, so the listeners will have a chance to meet you.
Okay, I have all my relatives listening, so I might as well say, hi, this is Mercedes DeMunk. And I will tell you that we started out in 97 over at the Cultural Center, and it was called the Broadcast Museum. Bruce Dumont had
That's right, in the back. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and it was a very small place. We crowded a lot of people in there, a lot of bodies on that little stage.
How and why did you start, Mercedes? How and why did this? I mean, you started doing your productions there?
Yeah, well, the reason this started was because we started a seniors committee over at the union, and we thought, what can we talk about? Well, we don't want to talk about politics, nah.
You don't want to talk about health and we're taking. And
yeah,
all that.
No.
About my leg hurts,
right.
My arm hurts. Yeah.
We all wanted to talk about ourselves and the shows.
Our grandkids, yeah. Yeah.
But one of the members, Don Ferris, said, gee, I've got an idea. I have scripts at home, and I invite some friends over, and we do little excerpts of radio shows. So we decided, hey, that's what we all do best, so we're all actors, and so that's how we got started. And we thought it would be a great idea not only to promote the union, but also to help ourselves keep in shape for when we got the call for the next audition.
And talent buyers are always welcome.
It really is, has been exactly that that we've worked on. And we've done it now for 21 years.
The faces
have changed, but a lot of us are still here from the beginning.
They've just gotten better looking. The productions, to my mind, and these are not thrown together productions, the productions that I have seen over the years have been terrifically professional. There's no question about that, and I think that's one of the reasons you've been so successful. Connie, you're also an executive board member, aren't you?
An executive board member, yeah. I'm the co-chair of the seniors committee. So we try to recreate them as closely as we can to the original production. And so we have live sound effects.
Wow.
Sometimes we have a keyboard artist. We've had a harp on stage. We've had tap dancers on stage. We have done everything to make it as entertaining as possible for an audience, because we cannot broadcast these,
right?
Because
right.
They couldn't pay us.
Yeah,
because
of course, because you're members of SAG-AFTRA.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Right,
so
right.
We do these for free for the education of our audience members
and the entertainment. I mean,
yes.
And the entertainment.
Yes.
Well, we hope it's entertaining.
Well, it is. It has been. I'm sure there's a production Thursday at the Cultural Center that begins, doors open at 6:30 in the Claudia Cassidy Theater. The shows start about 7-ish. There will be an episode of The Saint and an episode of The Great Gildersleeve. Roger Badish is directing one of them. Who's directing the other one?
Pat Vern Harris.
I am.
Pat Vern Harris.
Hi, Pat. Why are you directing and not starring?
Years ago, I started a community theater and did not know I liked to direct, and discovered that, wow, I loved directing. It's the power.
It is the power. You saw Roger here. I mean, it is the power. Let me ask the others. Alma, you and I have known each other over the years. I think we've done some stuff at Bughouse Square.
Absolutely.
And who knows at every other thing we never got paid for.
That's right. And we did a thing about Studs Terkel.
Of course.
Was
Alma, how did you get involved in this game?
Well, I
I heard about the group, and I thought, well, you're not doing any work. I mean, this is one way of keeping, as they say, the chops moving. So why not check it out? So I did. I auditioned, and I didn't get in for several shows, but that's okay. I attended them all. And finally, got a role, and then we were just hooked. Love it. It's just such fun. I mean, we don't care that we don't get money. I mean, we'd love to have some.
Yeah, but, of course. You know, of course.
You just don't do it for that. It's a way of making the people at home.
Well, and also, I mean, for all of you, it must be that incredible jolt one gets from connecting with a live audience.
It is.
I mean, doing a voiceover work is fine, and it can make money, but there is nothing for an actor. I'm not one. But for you people to make that contact, that there's such a direct flow of energy, I think, from performer to audience. Now,
I'm Joni Winter.
Joni, how did you get involved?
Okay. My background is mostly equity musical theater. And I was in L.A., I was in New York. When I came back to Chicago, which is where I started, one of the girls who's a member of this group, Madeline Fallon, who I'd work with at Children's Theater, said, come on, you'd really like this. And I went to the first one, and I loved it. And I got to tell you, these people welcomed me with open arms. I can't explain it. I love these people. There's a gentleman who was very active. You remember Herb Graham?
Sure.
You remember Herb? He used to.
What do I look into? I think you think my memory's fading. No, I'm fine.
He was just.
No, I'm joking. I'm
just
joking.
A dear, dear, wonderful man. And he used to say to me, Joni, why do you like this group so much? And I said, I feel number one that I learn something every time I'm on stage with these people.
Interesting.
Every time.
Interesting.
And there's not a lot of egos because everyone does this because they love it. And
yeah, but there has to be some ego to get up. Who gets on stage has to have some ego.
There's no egos in this room. Let me take over here.
For him. But honestly, I mean, there is some, of course.
Yeah.
But on the whole, there isn't. And people help each other and people love each other. It's a very special group.
It's an ensemble.
It's an ensemble.
It's a family. It's a real family.
You think of it as a family.
Absolutely.
How often do you rehearse?
We have one rehearsal before the show, and then we have a tech rehearsal the day of the show. That's it.
Sometimes there are a few more. This is Joni again. Sometimes there are more when they do a musical.
Sometimes.
Or we've done a few musicals, not that many, and that's more of a hybrid than just the act.
It's I'm very grateful too that you say after senior radio players allow men into this group. Joel Daly sitting in there, looking like a total pro with his headphones on. Roger Badish has left the newsroom to be in here. Who are you guys, and what is it for you? How long have you been involved, and how did you get involved, and why?
I'm John Green, and I want to say that. Something special about old-time radio for me was years ago, a lovely man, Bob O'Donnell, who just passed away, got me involved with Unshackled, which is the radio dramas at Pacific Garden Mission.
Oh, yeah,
worldwide.
I remember
and
that.
I just loved it.
Yeah.
And I would hear stories from older guys there that used to be in the old-time radio days. You know, they'd do a radio show, go across town in Chicago. And so when Connie's the one who invited me in and tried it. I thought, I missed the old-time radio days, but I can play with this.
Yeah. Mr. Lichtenstein?
I'm Herb Lichtenstein. As John was saying, some of the original members of this group actually participated in the golden age of radio. We think of New York and L.A. as being media centers, but in the golden age of radio, Chicago was just as big a center for radio as New York or L.A.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a break. I'm so appreciative of all of you staying up late and coming in tonight. We'll take about a little break because that, as you all well know, is how we pay for this vaunted station and this vaunted show. We'll be back, and then we're going to do a little, we're going to do a portion of one of the shows, are we not? Live? You're all ready for that?
Sure. Yep. We're ready.
This isn't actually your formal rehearsal, is it? Just joking. We'll be right back with the SAG-AFTRA Radio Players. I'm back. Well, we can scream in here. I'm signing an autograph for a young man here. It's total chaos in here, but that's the hallmark of the SAG-AFTRA Senior Radio Players. You want to do what? Remind people. Let me ask you all another question. You know, we're all of relatively similar age. Studs, who died at 96 about 10 years ago, was a person I thought of the old radio days. I know that people listen to Carl Amari's show. I wonder, however, when you talk about the audience for what you do, is inevitably a shrinking audience of people who say, oh, yeah, I remember listening to the Lone Ranger. I remember this. It occurs to me that I think what you should be drawing, and I hope you are younger people who don't know who the great Gildersleeve is and don't know who the saint was and never did listen to the radio shows, because instead of fostering nostalgia, you are giving something brand new to these people.
I think we like to get younger people in.
I'll bet.
And sometimes they're just amazed by what they're listening to. They have no idea what it was.
Well, now with podcasts so popular and all these forms, I think there could be a comeback. I really do.
I don't think there's any question. Yeah. I mean, it's drama on radio, and the creativity that was used. You know, someone just sitting at home, they have to imagine what these people look like, what these people wear. I think it's a wonderful
thing. That's what I was thinking about, Rick, that, you know, you remember when we were younger, listening to radio and how exciting it was.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think if we can instill that in people who really want to be involved with us, it would be great.
It's theater for the mind.
It is. And then for the shut-ins. There are a lot of people who are shut in, ill, and it's great entertainment for them.
All right, tell me what we're going to do. Or actually, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to listen and enjoy like an audience member.
We're going to do two, I hope, short scenes from Gildersleeve. And the episode is called Eve and Gildy Get Together. It's from 1944.
I'm ready.
Leroy, you come back here.
I don't know what scene you're doing.
Oh, page eight.
Oh, sorry. Let's try that.
Okay.
Take two.
Leroy, you come back here.
I'm not going anywhere, Uncle.
You bet you're not. You come into the dining room.
Is there something you want?
No. Young man.
It slipped my mind, Unc, honest.
What did? What slipped your mind?
The report card. I forgot to show it to you.
Where is this report card?
I've got it right here in my pants pocket.
Well, let's have a look at it.
Yes, sir. Huh. It's stuck. I can't seem to get it out.
Perhaps I can help you.
Oh, no. I've got it. There. Report card.
Leroy.
Well, the teacher doesn't like me, Unc.
I don't blame her. Besides, I've heard that before.
What did he get, Uncle Mort?
Never you mind.
Never mind.
You keep out of this, young man.
Yes, sir.
How long have you had this report card?
3 weeks.
3 weeks?
I didn't want to spoil your Christmas.
You mean you didn't want to spoil your Christmas? Leroy, this is a very serious matter.
Yes, sir.
How could you deliberately deceive me in that way? After all I've done for you.
I forgot, Unc.
You did not forget. Now, don't keep saying that.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, Mr. Gildersleeve. If you don't mind, I'll run along now and leave the dishes till later.
Just a minute, Bertie.
Yes, sir?
Bertie, what would you think of a boy who would deliberately hide a report card from his uncle?
Oh, now, I don't think Leroy would do a thing like that. He probably just forgot.
That's right. I forgot.
Quiet, you. Bertie, when we want your opinion, we'll ask for it. Oh,
yes, sir. Excuse me. I thought you asked for it. Well, I'll be going now.
By George, Leroy, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. It seems to me you just go from bad to worse.
Yes, sir.
You won't study. You have no manners. You won't brush your hair.
You'd think he might clean his nails before he comes to the table, too.
Oh, yeah? Let's see yours. I dare you.
There. Yeah.
Well, they'd look better without that red stuff on them.
I loved it. I loved it. You really brought that dysfunctional family really, really to life. Pat Van Harris, you must be very pleased with the.
I am.
She's the director.
I truly am pleased with them, considering this is our
first run through.
Yes,
this is like a table reading here. You guys were great.
Yes.
You guys were great. You were really, really in character.
Our rehearsal is not until Tuesday morning.
Well, no, your rehearsal is right now. Right now. You have another scene. You want to slip it? Try to slip in another one. What is this one? Just set it up a bit.
27.
Yeah,
or maybe page 31.
It doesn't matter. Just grab a page and start reading.
Why don't we do the one on 31?
And on 31?
Because of that includes.
Okay.
Because everybody can. Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to explain it?
The school principal is visiting Gildersleeve and is having dinner with him because she wants to talk to Gildersleeve about Leroy.
I'll bet she does. I'm surprised. Does Leroy at the end, is some episode in Gildersleeve wind up in prison or anything?
He's only 10 years old. Not
well, I know. Well, eventually. But you just get that sense that this kid could be headed for trouble.
He runs for president.
There are two ways people can go these days.
The other segment of this scene involves Eve, the principal, angling for the affections of Gildersleeve.
Oh, interesting.
He's an available man. Oh, I don't really think you have to worry about Leroy.
Leroy, that's how you pronounce it.
It's just that he's going through that difficulty.
How long does it last? It seems to me he's been going through it ever since I've known him.
Well, boys will be boys. There's nothing really wrong with Leroy. I've talked to his teacher about him, and we both feel all he needs is guidance.
Well, I punish him regularly, about twice a week.
Well, I don't mean quite that.
Here's the clubs, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, well, thank you, Bertie.
Anything else?
No, I think we've got everything. Thanks. Will you pour, Eve?
I'd be delighted.
Click, 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 click.
Oh, I love having coffee in the evening, don't you?
Sure do. I like it for breakfast, too. And for lunch.
Throckmorton, has it ever occurred to you that Leroy might need a mother?
Well, I tried to be a father.
Come on.
Well, you have, and I admire you for it. Everyone does.
Well, he's a good kid. They're both good kids.
But don't you think they need someone who can give them what a mother has to give them?
Well, I never thought of it that way. Maybe you're right.
Someone who would not only be a guide and a mother to them, but, well, you have yourself to think of, too. After all, a house without love isn't much of a home. You must have felt that.
You know, it's funny, you saying that. I almost got married about a year ago. I guess I told you.
Yes, you told me.
Then I sort of gave up the idea. Maybe I shouldn't.
Well, we've all had our disappointments, but I don't think you should let one unfortunate affair sour you on the whole idea. If at first you don't succeed.
Oh, Eve, you're wonderful. You don't know what you've done for me this evening. You've made up my mind for me.
Have I, Throckmorton?
For months now, I've been this way and that. Should I or shouldn't I?
I know, I have too.
But when you bring up the kids, that settles it. By George, I'll do it.
Oh, you seem very sure of yourself, Mr. Gildersleeve. After all, you haven't asked the girl, you know.
Listen, with Beauregard out of the way, Leela will marry me in a minute.
The cup drops on the saucer.
Eve, is something wrong?
If you'll excuse me, I think I better be going.
But Eve, so early, you haven't even finished your coffee.
End of scene.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're pretty dense, I must tell you. Your character is pretty dense.
Because
Connie Foster, you play a very seductive young woman. I can't imagine him not falling for you.
Sir.
That was fabulous. So the entire, will you be doing an entire Thursday or March 1st at Thursday, an entire half hour?
Yes. Yes.
That represents an episode of Gildersleeve?
Yes.
That
the whole
would
episode.
Include those parts? Wow.
With the pianist.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful writing.
And then he goes to Leela's house, played by Mercedes DeMunk. So we have a little bit of a scene about that, too.
Oh, I see. And Mercedes, don't spoil it. You can tell me off air whether you turn this character down and take... Or take
certainly
the
do. Leela Ransom's not going to take any guff from him.
Yes, and I think it's all, I must tell you, I think it's all Leroy's fault. We're going to talk more after the news, which would be delivered by Roger Badish, who is directing The Saint. We got to get some commercials in first, then we'll get news. Thanks, Aubrey. Aubrey Mumpire is the guy who directs this show, along with Lise Graham. Take it away, Aubrey. Look at you're getting applause here. It rarely happens. Welcome back. I was just philosophizing about my... Before we move on to The Saint and Joel Daly, I need to hear from Leela Ransom, who is going to be hit on, so to speak, by the great Gildersleeve.
Yes,
on Thursday night at the Claudia Cassidy Theater.
Yes, as the show evolves, Gildy comes over to propose to me, but he is not at all interested in looking at the baby pictures I have of my niece. And so I am completely upset with him, and I make him leave the house immediately.
I can just tell by your voice and accent, you're too good for him, aren't you?
Oh, thank you, Rick.
My pleasure. I sense that immediately. I don't mean to offend the good Mr. Gildersleeve, but I can just tell by your sense of sophistication and beauty, which doesn't really translate over the radio, that you aren't.
Thank you.
Joel Daly, it's great to see you. How did you get involved with these charming, delightful, talented people?
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Read in a column in the Tribune that the after players were going to do War of the Worlds. My roommate and I in college did that show. We produced it ourselves and sent it to Orson Welles. That was the famous
spoof. Oh, yeah, the man who created it, yeah.
And I thought, well, that's a great thing, and maybe I can get involved. And so I called after, and I said, how do you get in this group? And they said, well, you got to be older than 55. And I said, I qualify. And
that's it.
From then on, I just keep auditioning and I keep doing some great shows.
It's fun for you. I know you did. I mean, I've known you for a very long time and written about you a number of times.
Go back to Pudgy.
That's true. We go back to some bad bars, as they say. We go back to some bad, but legendary, but bad bars. You did a one-man show of Clarence Darrow.
Yes, I did. At the Cultural Center.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the photo.
We took a nice photo
of you out there. Have you always, being in television news, I think of Studs, who acted when he was young, and it was always seemed to me to be kind of a born actor, no matter what he was doing, no matter where he was. True for you too, Joel? I mean, being on television, I'm not saying as a newsman you're acting, but there are elements of acting
whatever you do as an actor to project and to communicate, you have to do as an anchor person.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same technique.
So let me hear... Roger Badish is here to tell. Oh, okay, Roger.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, tell me about The Saint.
The Saint was a character developed by Leslie Charteris in his 20s. It became a very popular radio show with Vincent Price, later to be done on television by Roger Moore. And he was sort of a Robin Hood. He took for himself, but he gave to the poor, and he took care of the poor. And that's why he was called the Saint.
I'm going to tell you a quick anecdote, all of you, because it's of an era. Vincent Price used to, when he was in town, he was doing maybe some kind of theater in Chicago or something. He is playing. He is Ed Holstein is playing at the Earl of Oldtown, and Vincent Price used to like to take in young ladies to have drinks at the Earl of Oldtown. And Eddie was up on stage, and he sees Vincent Price, and everybody knows who Vincent Price is. He sees Vincent Price sort of very aggressively hitting up this young woman, and finally, by seducing her back to his hotel room by saying, "Why don't we go back to my hotel room? I have a lot of young performer's records at my hotel room." Ed Holstein did not have any records. And as a result, he has ever admired Vincent Price for that one thing. I certainly remember the TV show. Set up this, Roger.
Yeah, I'm here. I can set it up for you.
Sure.
This is an episode from November of 1950.
I can't hear him.
No, he said, I'll translate. This is an episode from, go ahead.
November 1950.
November 19th, 1950.
Yeah, it's called No Hiding Place, and what's happened here
No Hiding
is,
Place, and what's happened here is...
Right, I should come in there, shouldn't I?
Yes.
I should. Well, I'll explain it, and then if you could just tell them to go ahead and do it.
Okay.
What's going on is that the saint has received a letter from a prisoner, Tommy Patrick.
The saint has gotten a letter from a prisoner.
And asking to save him because he thinks his life is threatened. And while the saint is at the prison to check on him, there's an escape, and it's the person the saint is looking for, trying to find. So what we have here is the saint after the prison. The saint needs to go check on where Tommy Patrick used to live, and he, of course, needs a ride. So we have in your studios there, we have the saint, which is Joel Daly.
Yes.
And Herb is Louis the cab driver. We are
Louis
now on the streets, and the saint walks up to the cab driver.
Cue the action.
The saint walks up to the cab driver. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen.
Taxi, taxi, taxi. Well, good afternoon, Louis.
Afternoon, Mr. Templar. Ain't it a heavenly day?
Yes, Louis, it is.
Where to, Mr. Templar?
312 Main Street, Louis.
Gotcha. You read about that prison break last night, Mr. Templar? They say this Patrick rode out in a laundry truck. You think they'll catch him?
Oh, sooner or later, Louis. They always do.
You know something? I kind of hope they don't. In my subconscious, that is. Why is that, Mr. Templar?
The universal guilt feeling, Louis. Whenever there's a man in hiding, that man might be you or me.
Yeah, food, huh?
Louis, it's Freud.
That's what I said, Siegfried Freud. You know something more, Mr. Templar? I kind of felt this way when that leopard escaped last spring, remember? Then he come back to his cage all by himself. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, an allegory, Louis.
No, it was a leopard. You think Patrick will come back to the cage, Mr. Templar?
Well, I'm afraid for that him, there's no hiding place. Hey, isn't this Main Street, Louis?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, 312. Yeah, anybody we know?
I got a tip that Tommy Patrick used to live here. Perhaps if I can help him, then you and I won't feel so guilty. Wait for me, Louis, all right?
Sure.
And there we go, and that's
I'll
the scene.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and then
that's the first. Roger's talking here.
Yeah, that's the first scene. He then walks up to the door and realizes he's been to that place before and spoken to that woman before. So that's the setup to the.
Well, how do you think?
Caper.
All right, Roger Battish, yeah. They can't hear you, so this is perfect. You're the director of the show. How do you think they just did? What do you can tell me? I won't pass it on.
There's a reason why I selected those two for those roles.
There's a reason why he selected the two of you for these roles, and I won't keep them in suspense anymore, and that reason would be Roger Battish.
Because they're perfect.
Because you're perfect.
Aww.
They were, aww. We got to take a little commercial break. We'll come back for some more time with the SAG after senior radio. I'm not calling you senior radio players. I'm calling you the SAG after radio players. That's nonsense. Y'all look younger than I do. The show takes place this coming Thursday. And again, I will emphasize it is a free show. Doors open at 6:30 Thursday at the Claudia Cassidy Theater. in the Cultural Center. If you don't know where that is, you certainly aren't a Chicagoan, but it's between Washington and Randolph on Michigan Avenue, across from that place called Millennium Park. It is, again, free. There will be one presentation of The Saint and a radio show, half hour, and the other of The Great Gildersleeve, where the Gildersleeve is just trying to get a wife and is getting turned down by all sorts of good-looking women. It will star these charming, charming people who are in here. Roger Badish is directing the episode of The Saint, and Pat Vern Harris is directing the episode of The Great Gildersleeve. We'll take a little commercial break and come back and talk some more with these lovely people. Welcome back. This is Rick Kogan. The show is After Hours. It has been an unbelievable delight to have in here a vast crowd, all of them members of the SAG-AFTRA Radio Players. They will be performing. You heard some bits and pieces of The Saint, which will be starring Joel Daly and Herb Lichtenstein, and The Great Gildersleeve, which stars all the rest of these fine people in here. Pat Vern Harris is directing. Joni Winter's in it. Connie Foster. Mercedes de Monk turns down Gildersleeve. It rivals anything on cable television these days. One thing, ladies and gentlemen, if you're young, come see these shows. If you don't have any idea who The Great Gildersleeve is or who The Saint was, it's worth your time to drop in. First of all, it's free. Doesn't cost you anything. Second of all, it's very convenient at the Cultural Center. And third, you'll be getting it fresh. You will have no baggage. You will have no nostalgia. You'll be getting it very directly and viscerally, and I think that's really great. Don't you, Roger Badish?
Yeah, I do. And I think
now, have you been in some of these shows?
I have. For how long have I been with the group now? Maybe.
Don't tell me you've played the newsman.
In The Whistler, in an episode of The Whistler, I actually whistled at the beginning. I'm the only one in the group who can hold a whistle for more than 5 seconds.
Well, that'll keep you employed.
I was Tonto to John Landecker's Lone Ranger.
That's right.
I was the goofy groom in an episode of some other mystery episode. I've done a handful over the years. Of course, other things have gotten in the way of doing more, but I got into it because I've known about the group for a long time, but I wasn't old enough to get into it back when I first heard about it.
Well, you could have pretended. They wouldn't have checked your driver's license.
Well, I've always been mistaken for being older than I was, which is how I got into bars before I was 21. Uh-oh. But since I was teaching broadcasting, and I had a huge unit on the history of broadcasting, and especially on old-time radio, and I made my students do old-time radio shows, when I heard about the group, and it may even have been from your column.
Could be.
Way back when, I jumped at a chance to audition.
Has it been as rewarding for you? I just get a sense from all of you folks that this is more than a hobby. This is much more than a modest diversion, that this is a very, very meaningful and rewarding thing for all of you. Anybody.
Absolutely.
I would say we were passionate about it.
Yeah, I sense
fact,
that.
I would like to remind you that as a member of good standing in SAG-AFTRA and our union brother, you are welcome to audition and perform in any of our upcoming shows as well.
Yeah, if you're old enough.
What
Rick?
Are you, insane? I'm not auditioning for anything. What are you, crazy?
And you're not old enough, are you?
I'm old enough. Oh, yeah. I'm no Roger Badish, but I am old enough.
There's no ego involved.
Of course not. No, certainly not on my part either. Have you ever thought, there's a group of actors in town, roughly, certainly almost all of them old enough to be joined, I don't know if they're members of SAG-AFTRA or not, people like Gary Houston and Nate Herman, who have been putting on dramatic readings of films. I think they've done.
I'm a part of that group.
You're everywhere. I think that's another aspect of this whole thing. Then there's the Chicago Shakespeare Project, which puts on these free really serious on book, though. I mean, they are reading on book. I think this is a marvelous kind of, you know, dramatic subculture in Chicago, but a famous theater town. But doesn't it seem wonderful to any and all of you that you have all of these things going on?
All of these storytellers.
Yeah.
I want to make a plug. I'm
Here, get closer to that mic.
I'm a writer with Chicago Dramatists, too.
Oh, wow, sure.
Stage readings every Saturday and the same kind of purity of storytelling.
Yeah, I think if you just people, if you look... Or go see these characters on Thursday night at the Claudia Cassidy Theater and ask them, network that way. Are you all still working? Yeah, Roger, go ahead.
Well, I don't know how your time is running here.
Wait a minute. You know more than I do.
Well,
about
I looked
how
at it. I didn't know
works.
What your commercial load was.
We got Aubrey. What do we got?
We good for a couple
We're
minutes?
We're all the way till 10 o'clock. We have ladies and gentlemen, we have 7 solid minutes to yak.
Well, a couple of quick things about the show. It's not just people standing on stage reading the scripts.
Right,
we do the entire production, which means we have the
sound
open
effects.
And close. We have the commercials from the shows
that are
read in the shows. And we have live sound effects. So when someone's supposed to be walking over in the sound effects department... Someone is walking on wood, special wood that echoes, and there's a microphone down there to pick it up.
Wow.
Open the door, close it, windows, even a fight, which Joel Daly will be involved in 2 or 3 of them during the show.
2 or 3 fights?
Fights. There will be someone else doing the punching. All Joel has to do...
I get beat up bad.
All Joel has to do is grunt a few times.
Oh!
There you go.
Listen, ladies and
gentlemen.
This
is how he got the part.
Wow.
This is awesome.
And Konai Shaughnessy has been our sound person
for many members are... Is it a... Yeah, if you have to audition, that formalizes it somewhat. How many members are there in the SAG-AFTRA Radio Players? Do you know?
Well, I would say at the Christmas party, everybody shows up. Whether they show up the rest of the year or not.
Yeah.
There might be about 50 at the Christmas party. Uh-huh. I think they're usually around 30 for the auditions.
Yeah.
And the reason we have auditions is because we want to treat it just like a job would be. We just don't say, I'm going to pick Herb for this or I'm going to pick you for this. It's got to be an audition kind of a thing, you know. And I will say Joel Daly is so terrific. He will do anything. I mean, he might want one particular role, but if we say, really need you as an ounce on this, he'll do it. He's a cool, wonderful man.
What a nice thing to say.
Well,
now,
it's true.
Mercedes,
it's true.
Do you and Connie as the executive, who runs the auditions? Who makes the call on this? Because I know anybody who has been in SAG-AFTRA for any amount of years is absolutely used to and almost loving rejection because you know it better than better than anything in the world.
We accept it, but we don't love it.
you get used to it, that's for sure. But who makes the call? On the audition.
Well, we have a steering committee, but we also we choose the directors for the shows, and the directors will figure out who the cast is.
Gotcha. Roger, was this hard for you? How big is your cast in The Saint, by the way?
The what?
In The Saint, how big is the cast? Joel and Herb and how many others?
12 people, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
With all the different people. Some of them are very short, small roles.
Still.
But again, in acting, there are no small roles.
Yeah.
You know.
They're only small actors, I know.
But we've got that. I will tell you this. I think casting this was one of the hardest things I've had to do in my life. Seriously.
Really?
Seriously. I was exhausted by the end. I think I was in there for about 2 hours by the time I got done seeing everyone. And I have an assistant, a producer, Rob Alton, who helped. He was there with me, and we talked things out and knocked things around and stuff. And then I leaned on Mercedes and Connie for a lot of guidance because, again, this is my first directing role. But by the end of the day, I didn't have the strength to leave the office to go to my car to drive home. It was that exhausting, seriously.
But exciting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was exciting. It was, I as the day went on and I started hearing voices that like, oh my God, that fits the perfect role, or maybe I like the way the inflection is, but maybe we can change the voice a little bit. Give it to me in this way. Yeah. Let me see if you might be the one I want. And then the list, and then, of course, we didn't really have that many trying out on this past time. So then Pat and I had to sit down for about an hour afterwards to make sure that we didn't have that many duplications. Same people on the same in both roles.
Yeah, I had about five people that he wanted that I wanted to. Yeah.
We worked it out and it got it down to only one duplicate, and that's Herb.
It sounds so exciting. I got to ask you, in the minute or two we have left, and I've been in here with Herb Lichtenstein, Pat Fern Harris, Joni Winter, Connie Foster, Mercedes DeMonk, John Green, Alma Washington, Joel Daly, and Roger Badish. Do any of you get nervous before a show?
Oh, yes. And when you lose your place, which I have done, you panic. So it's all the things that go along with the auditioning for it.
Well, you people have been beyond charming, delightful, and entertaining.
Oh, you.
These are members of the SAG-AFTRA Radio Players. They'll be premiering episodes of The Saint and The Great Gildersleeve. Doors open at 6:30. Showtime is at 7, Thursday night at the Claudia Cassidy Theater at the Cultural Center. Thank you for staying up late and for enlightening me and entertaining me and all these people listening.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You guys are the best.
For having
you us. Guys are the
Yay.
Best. You guys are the best. And the Gildersleeve is now fascinating. I'm going to literally tomorrow we'll be doing research on this crazy character and his.
You want me to tell some of the stories about us?
I know.
We're out of time.
No, that's for. That's
a different show.
That's for Sirius FM, Joel. I think, you know, that can only be... Well, Howard Stern has been after me to get you and me on his show to talk about misadventure. He wants to call it Misadventures on Randall Street and Rush Street. those were good times, though, I got to tell you. And the good times are still happening. You people have been... I've known about you, but I hope for many, many, many listeners out there, you've also been a revelation. I mean, I
Thank
think,
you.
And bring your kids, ladies
absolutely.
And gentlemen, because that's the jolt to just be introduced to this. It's one thing to go, oh, yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah.
It's another thing to go, holy Christ, this is fantastic. Yeah. It's drama.
And to watch live sound effects is fascinating.
I know. It's ideas from the mind. So thank you all. Get home safely.
Thank you.
And knock them dead, as they say.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. It's my pleasure.